Hi there, everybody, and welcome back to the Bumblecast. This is episode number 15, which officially puts us past the benchmark set by season one.
Oh, yeah, we did it.
Yeah.
I think.
We did, trust me.
We're 15 episodes into this. I think it's going pretty well.
Season, so.
We're getting over the growing pains hump, I suppose.
Yeah,
We're getting there.
I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the holder of the Triforce of Awesome, Kyle Krause.
I was hoping you'd call me the Hero of Time so I could make a DeLorean joke.
I'm sorry. Well, play the Song of Time backwards and we'll try it again.
No, that's all right. We don't need it. We don't need to edit anything.
You sure you don't want to put that little clip in there and then I can say?
No.
Okay. As you might be able to tell by that subtle reference, today's episode is devoted to a little-known video game franchise, The Legend of Zelda.
I've never heard of it.
Don't you lie to me, Kyle. You're the holder of the Triforce of Awesome.
I told you, I've never heard of it.
Legend of Zelda series, which is the action-adventure, sometimes role-playing game-ish, puzzle, dungeon-crawling, combat-y, music sim. There's a little bit of everything.
Action RPG. That's generally what it's called, I believe.
That seems too simple for this.
Right, of course.
But just recently celebrated its, what was it, 25th anniversary?
30th, I believe.
30th, goodness, make me feel old.
Yeah, 1980. Yeah, it was launched in 1986 in the Nihon, the land of the rising sun.
It just threw a smack dab in the middle of a wasteland so that you wandered into a cave so an old man can give you a sword because it's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
Yes. What was your first Zelda experience, Ian?
Oh, I know I'm already going to get some flack from the hardcore fans, but my first one was Ocarina of Time.
That was the first experience of a lot of people, actually.
That's because I was a Genesis kid growing up.
Right.
I never had a Nintendo or a Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I hear the boos and the hisses from the crowd. Sit down, enjoy your popcorn. But my dad was a big technophile, and when the N64 came out, you know, the first truly 3D system, he jumped on that. And you know, we played through Mario 64, and funny story, the first time I played Mario 64, I honestly got a migraine from trying to navigate in 3D.
I have heard stories of that happening. It was a relatively fresh new thing. 3D platformers existed, but they were a bit primitive in comparison most of the time. So
a little more linear in their construction.
Right, that too.
And then Ocarina of Time just absolutely blew my mind. The first time walking out onto Hyrule Field after talking to Kaibora Gaibora, and he's like, "Do you want to hear all that again?" And you go, "No," but you accidentally select yes, and you have to go through those five paragraphs again. But after that, you step out onto Hyrule Field, and it's like, this is so massive. I don't know what to do. And I honestly got lost early on. I couldn't find my... It was too expansive of a game world.
Ocarina is really easy to get lost in.
Nowadays, it's like, oh, this is so puny. How quaint.
Yeah. This is true. Going back to it now, it's like, man, what were we thinking about how big this was? It's not very large at all. There's not much going on.
And I'm fairly certain it's somewhat scripted or at least constructed in this way that you can't reach Castle Hyrule before the first sunset. And the gate goes up right as you approach. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? You know, it's night out. Do I have to wait for the gate? And then the stall children come out of the ground. It's like, no. Spooky skull babies, kill, run, hide, help.
Yeah,
I hit
yeah.
the remote for the first night. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, basically you just kind of have to camp out and wait. wait for the day to come. It's a bit of a harrowing experience at first.
Just a bit.
Yep.
But that was my first real hardcore exposure to Legend of Zelda, and jumped upon Majora's Mask when that came out, and that was an incredible experience.
I do not have much experience with Majora's Mask, actually. Like Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker, the only games I really know as far as the 3D Zeldas.
Well, now,
but
before we move on to Wind Waker, because that's one that people talk about a lot.
Right.
Majora's Mask seems to be the kind of one where you either love it as this brilliant take on the entire franchise and, oh my god, it was perfect, and people going, no, you're just saying that because you're an edgelord. It wasn't that great. It was yeah. I am more towards the first camp. Obviously, it's not, you know, perfect by any stretch, but it was different enough. It was, you know, a direct sequel. It used a lot of the assets from Ocarina of Time, but it had such a different tone. It had such a different feel to it that it felt like an honest-to-goodness sequel, not a rehash or an attempt to kind of reinvent the wheel, kind of way Wind Waker and Skyward Sword and some of those did. It felt like, here's what works, and now we're going to build off it in a way that feels like a new experience.
I've heard that it's actually, it's quite good, and a very different experience from the rest of the series. Just the story and the repeating time aspect.
Right.
It's kind of a Groundhog Day scenario, I suppose.
Similar, a little bleaker. Similar. Than
well, yeah, yeah. Well, Groundhog Day is pretty dark. Yeah.
I don't know, of all the dark storylines, and I'm not going to spoil this because this game's been out for years. The one point that I distinctly remember really affecting me the most, and this is after experiencing a lot of the sad and depressing or heart-tugging moments in the game, is the swordmaster that you learn your first few sword techniques from in town. For the 3 days is boasting about how he's going to chop the falling moon in half and how everyone can stay safe because he's going to save them all and blah, blah, blah. On the final day, as everyone is either clearing out of town or defiantly staying, if you go into the sword shop, there is a little wooden placard at the back of the room, and there's a sign on the in front of it saying, you know, I left to go train or fight or something. Go around the sign, cut down the placard, you find the swordmaster huddled in a corner, shivering, and just saying to himself, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. And it's like, good God, that's depressing and horrifying. And it just, it was so simple a moment, but it really affected me, because here you are, having done so much, and you see someone who's supposed to be of your caliber having a very real, very raw human moment.
Yeah, that's really dark for a Zelda game. Surprisingly dark. My first Zelda experience was actually the first game, the NES game.
Oh, okay.
I never owned it, but in my neighborhood there was a foster home with a whole ton of kids there, and the family would babysit me every once in a while, and all the guys that stayed there were really cool. All the guys who lived there, and they were really cool, and they would play Nintendo with me and let me play their Nintendo, and I played Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. Personally, I preferred Zelda 2, and I know for some people that's probably going to be a surprise, and they might be like, what is wrong with you? But I grew up a Mario kid, a side-scroller kid. Mario, Sonic, those were my jam. I never really got super into RPGs and even action RPGs, really. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed Zelda, but I just kind of wandered around. I didn't know necessarily what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were, like, dungeons that were levels and stuff that you had to go find, or really, or anything. I think the guys who I was there with were trying to help me, but I was either like too young or just didn't care and just wanted to wander around and shoot likes with a sword or whatever. I don't know. But Zelda 2 was, as hard as it is, and it is an incredibly difficult game.
Oh, yeah.
It is not easy at all. But the side-scrolling nature of it was more my speed, I think. I never got very far in that one either, though, so.
I think it's funny that you say that you weren't big into the action RPG elements, where Zelda 2 is the one that introduced stuff like the magic meter and experience points and health bar and...
Yeah, leveling up and stuff.
Yeah.
I never really paid attention to that. I was just like, hey, that sounds more like Mario. I guess I can just run left and right, and I can jump, and hey, I can still stab people with a sword. That's pretty cool. I don't know. I was like 6, 7 at the time. I was
sure.
I was like, you know, I'm just wandering around here, dying all the time. It's fine. Not a big deal. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where to go. I'm just going.
Well, the other one you had experience with, and another very divisive Zelda title, was Wind Waker.
Yes, Wind Waker, yes.
Which, some of the, I think, salt that remains, that didn't come from the World Ocean, is from people who were really hyped up on the E3 tech demo for the GameCube, which showed, at the time, a really visually stunning battle between Link and Ganondorf. And it still is pretty nice if you can find the old clip. And everyone was expecting that kind of visual style. So when they went with the now iconic Toon Link version, I can understand why some people were a little put out.
Yeah.
But I think that the way that it came together really feels like you're playing an animated feature. It's an experience unlike any other game that I can immediately think of. And not just the visuals and the cell shading, but the way that the music is timed with your hits and reaches a crescendo really makes it feel like you're playing a full experience beyond just the push, switch, kill moblins type of thing that the rest of the series is.
Yeah, I think for fans, hindsight is 20/20. I think Wind Waker is very beloved at this point almost for most people, regardless of its art style or even because of its art style. And I think actually it's probably one of the better looking games in the entire series. And it's held up really well just because of the art style. If you go back to Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask, they look okay, but they definitely aren't the mind-blowing... They don't really have that mind-blowing wow factor that that they had at the time. You know, now you have all those jagged N64-style polygons and the blurry textures where, like, even if you're zoomed out a million miles away, they still look like freaking smears all across the, across the Hyrule Field. It's like,
Nowadays, when I think about those two titles, I think of the remastered 3DS versions.
Yeah.
Which look how you think it looked back in the original version. So, hindsight's a little skewed there.
Right, yeah.
I am going to be combative here and say that I don't agree with the major critique of Wind Waker, which was too much empty sailing.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, if you replaced the King of Red Lions with a horse and the water with ground, you would have comparable empty space to Ocarina of Time's Hyrule Field.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Hyrule Field was smaller overall, but that was because it was a smaller game.
Right.
You know, every single map tile had some little puzzle or some little thing to explore. And granted, some of the underground grottos were copy-paste. The pirate bases are, you know, here is the same rock wall with the different turrets. But, and overall, the traversal of the terrain wasn't necessarily any more different than Hyrule Fields. It arguably had more going on with your occasional cyclones or thunderstorms or, you know, larger waves or even the barrels that popped out that you had a little something to do in most cases.
Yeah. I think the HD remake of Wind Waker sort of tried to alleviate a lot of the complaints.
Right. With the faster sail,
yeah. It doesn't make it, I don't think it makes it too fast necessarily, but it does take a little bit of the edge off of waiting.
Now, the one field that I feel like really did feel very empty was Skyward Sword.
That's what I've heard.
That one felt criminally underutilized. And I don't know, a lot of Skyward Sword feels like they ran out of time, at least to me. I don't know what they had in terms of budget or timetable, like if it was rushed out for an anniversary or whatever. I don't remember.
Yes, it was the 25th anniversary, I believe.
Oh, there we go. Maybe that's what it was. But stuff like, you know, when you get Epona in Ocarina of Time and in Majora's Mask and in Twilight Princess, gaining Epona is a very personal experience.
Yeah.
In Skyward Sword, they talk about your loft wing and how you have this deep personal connection and everyone has their personal bird. And you don't get to name it. It doesn't even have a default name like a pony usually does. It's just Lynx Loftwing.
Huh.
And you don't really interact with it a whole lot. The opening tutorial mission has you rescue it, and it's your main conveyance between the two things of interest in the sky overworld. But otherwise, you don't have a real connection to this bird that they drummed up a lot of stuff for. So I honestly wonder if there was something meant more for them, or if they were trying to drum up its importance to mask the fact that it was just a mechanic.
Yeah, I don't know. I've also heard a lot of complaints about Fee or Fi or whatever you want to call her. Just that she's kind of in the same vein as Navi from Ocarina. She's kind of annoying.
She definitely can get on your last nerve. And it's a little different from Navi with her. At least she's a very punctuated, "Hey, listen, Link, hey, Link, listen." With Fi, it's more of the Zelda non-talk babble. So when she pops up to point out the fairly obvious thing, and, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah.
And it, you know, comes out as, you know, "Master, there is probably an 85% chance you can defeat this moblin. Thank you, Fi. Just get back on the sword." "Master, I believe if you step on this switch, it will open this door. I learned that 3 dungeons ago, Fi. Thank you very much. Get back on the sword."
It's very robotic, which is kind of odd in a Zelda game.
Well, it's Fi and the very little mythos you get on the goddess Hylia and the war with demise that created Skyloft and the world as it is interesting in that Fi almost kind of toes the line of Magitek.
Ah, okay.
Because she is the spirit that drives the power of the sword, and your primary quest, at least early on, is to upgrade it into the Master Sword.
Right.
And, again, no spoilers because these games have been out for a while. Your primary antagonist throughout the series, Girahim, who is one of the best antagonists we've gotten out of this franchise.
I only know him from Hyrule Warriors, and he's great even there.
Oh, he's got so much character. He's phenomenal. It turns out that he is basically the Anti-Fi. He is the spirit driving the demon blade wielded by the dark god Demise. And his entire purpose throughout the game is to resurrect his master.
Hmm.
And during your final fight with Girahim, he changes form, and his final form looks very similar to Fi with the diamond pattern and the kind of upturned hair and the very sleek bodysuit. So when you put it together like that, it's really interesting.
Huh. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The dungeons of Skyward Sword, I would almost say, make up for all the other shortcomings, because those are some of the most fun I've had figuring out and navigating the dungeons in a Zelda game. Like, more than once, I was like, ooh, I'm having fun.
Huh.
There's one level in particular where you go out to this desert, and the entire theme of the dungeon is time travel. And you get in this little power boat that's got a time crystal attached to it, and as you drive the boat, it creates this ripple of space-time around you, so that the immediate area is the desert back when it was a lake. So as you're driving across this barren sand field, immediately around you is water and coral reefs and blue sky, and you just generate that past around you as you boat around, and that is one of the coolest visuals in any game that I've played.
Nice.
But there are other shortcomings, like the whole thing is supposed to be that the goddess Hylia lifted up the chosen people, the Hylians, into their floating city, which kind of makes you feel like, well, there isn't really a sustainable population here, nor is there enough housing for all the families. And then covered the rest of the world in a protective cloud cover so that nothing could get to them. Except when you get to the world below, everything's lush and green and there's plenty of sunlight and not really a lot of cloud cover. It's a really big plot hole there in your visual design.
That's weird.
And there's a lot of, here's the dungeon you've already completed, here's the gimmick where you go through it again, but differently. Which sometimes is kind of interesting. There's a foresty level, kind of your Korkiri Forest-styled dungeon, and later in the game it's flooded. So you're actually swimming around the massive world tree and facing off against enemies that you never would face normally in the forest setting. Tweaks like that are kind of fun. But the infamous running around and grabbing little collectibles on a time limit with creepy ghost knights that will come after you, that got a little hectic. But you know, you've already gone through this level before, and now it's the challenge mode almost. It felt like, here are all these really nicely designed dungeons that all interconnected, not in the usual Zelda style. It was almost like each dungeon was a mini overworld in its own right that all connected, almost. We've spent all our time building these. We don't have enough room to build anything else. Let's reuse these assets as much as possible in the same game.
Yeah. I noticed some 3D Zeldas kind of do that, though, where you kind of backtrack into dungeons, but they're tweaked a little bit. I think Wind Waker did that with at least one of its dungeons. I think in the late game you had to go back. I don't remember exactly.
It's been so long. Honestly, I got it for the Wii U, and I got as far as Ganon's Tower, and I've yet to finish it. I feel bad. Which is too bad, because Wind Waker's Ganon fight is one of the most satisfying of the final fights.
It's really cool, actually. Although I think one of the funniest things you can do in Wind Waker HD is you can make Link take selfies.
Yes.
So if you make him take selfies while he's being attacked by Ganondorf in the background, it's pretty hilarious.
It's perfect.
Yes, yes. I don't know. Toon Link is probably my favorite incarnation of Link. I'm just gonna outright say that, just because of his expressions. They just did so good with his facial expressions and how he reacts to things. He reacts in ways that I don't think you really get from other Links, or at least you can't really see those, just because they're not cartoonishly exaggerated like Toon Link is.
No, I would say Skyward Sword's Link is the most emotive of the humanoid Links, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really funny, almost anime-esque pratfalls and reactions on his end. But that one focused a lot on the character interactions as well.
Yeah.
But the two of them are definitely far beyond what Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask Links did, just in terms of the limitations of the hardware at the time.
I do like Skyward Sword's art style. It's a beautiful game.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice melding, almost kind of a middle ground between the toon and the realistic.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, the one title that we've kind of left out, which is smack dab in the middle, is Twilight Princess, which recently got its own HD release.
Yes, along with indeed.
The Midna on Wolf Link amiibo that I want. I need it precious. And we'll get into why in a little bit, but I don't know. Personally, of all the titles, Twilight Princess, I think, is maybe my least favorite overall.
Why is that?
Because I'm not particularly jazzed by the art style. I mean, it's nice, but it doesn't really stick with me. The fields themselves are massive, but they aren't very memorable. Again, personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have a lot of fun with any of the dungeons. Anything that I can immediately think of was like, oh yeah, I slogged through that. And the primary threat to the world, that Hyrule Castle and all of its citizens have been forced into this pocket dimension of Twilight, doesn't really have any menace because they act like they're going about their everyday lives. They don't realize that they are trapped. They don't realize that anything's changed. You're creeped out because there's all these ghosts around you, but they're fine. So it's like, oh, I'll save you from this fate that is mildly inconvenient. That said, Midna.
Midna is a neat character. Yeah.
She is the best supporting character out of any of the Zelda games, period. Tetris, very cool. Not going to argue that. King of Red Lions has his moments, definitely.
Yeah.
Tattle had some spunk. She was kind of fun. Navi kind of grew on you. Fi is endearing in her own aloof sort of way. Midna is the best. She's got the power, she's got the drive, she's got the snark. She's just a different type of companion, and it really sells her character. And the save I have on the GameCube version, no, excuse me, Wii version, beg your pardon, is saved right before the final dungeon, which is Hyrule Castle. And that pretty much makes up for the rest of the game entirely. Because, again, no spoilers, this game's been out for a while. Play it. You enter into the castle grounds, and there's a very, very faint, very simplistic track going on of, can't remember if it's Zelda's theme or if it's a very basic rendition of Ganondorf's theme. Regardless, you enter into the temple grounds and slowly fight your way up through the castle against increasingly difficult enemies. The supporting cats that you have forgotten about by this point because they don't do much show up to back you up. And you're like, oh, hey, there's those guys, and they're being cool. Neat. And then you get into a 4-stage boss fight that is some of the most satisfying, epic battles that... Oh, Kyle. So it starts off, because at this point it's been revealed that Ganondorf is the big bad all along, and Xant, as cool as he was, has been tossed to the side.
Yeah.
First thing you do is you enter into the throne room, and you have to fight Zelda. Puppet Zelda, to be more specific. Being controlled by Ganondorf. I can't think of another instance where you really directly fight Princess Zelda, and she's flying around, and she's shooting Triforce lasers at you, and she's using that really awesome-looking sword that you saw in all the trailers. And you don't want to hurt her because she's obviously Zelda, but you have to fight back because she ain't pulling her punches.
Right, yeah.
Then Ganondorf goes, all right, try this on for size. And he turns into Beast Ganon, the giant hulking porcine monster, that you see in the final Smash from Smash Brothers. And that one, you're forced to turn into Wolflink for half the fight, but that's just so Midna can grab him by the face with her hair hand and just suplex him. So that Wolflink can start tearing into the open wound in his belly. And you're like, oh my god, this is savage. This actually makes Wolflink fun to play. Bite him. Get him, boy. Seek him. Third phase. At this point, you think Midna has been lost to you. Third phase. You and Zelda, who's all better now.
Of course.
Riding in the field. She has the light arrows. And you have to chase down Ganondorf on horseback to slow him down enough so that she can shoot him full of light while fighting down other ghost horsemen that are surrounding Ganondorf. And you're tearing across the field, slashing things left and right, dodging Ganondorf's attack, Zelda's riding shotgun, shooting arrows off. And finally, he's off his horse. You're off your horse. You're in your little magic arena a la Ocarina of Time's final fight. And you go sword to sword with Ganondorf, who's like 8'15". I know that's not real math. Doesn't matter. He is huge. You are Tiny Link, and it is one of the most satisfying back-and-forth sword fights in the game. It is amazing.
Nice. Your enthusiasm and, makes me want to play this, or at least watch it.
I really don't enjoy the game itself, but that final dungeon and boss fight sequence is so satisfying. And because you enjoyed the selfie in Wind Waker, you'll enjoy this just as much. If you equip the fishing rod, either it's a bug or it's a feature, Ganondorf will be completely distracted by the lure. The fishing rod comes up to about eye level on him.
Nice.
And you dangle
nice.
It around. He's like, ooh, 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 can I catch it? Can I catch it? And then you go, stab, 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 stab. And he's like, ow. And then you whip it out again. He's like, ooh, 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 that's pretty. And you go, stab, 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 stab.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
So, at the very least, maybe find a playthrough on YouTube. I don't know.
Yeah, but, yeah.
That was satisfying. That I enjoyed a lot.
I will have to check that out because that sounds awesome. Oh, yeah. But, one thing I wanted to mention, going back to Skyward Sword real quick. Do you know about the little Easter egg of the main theme of that game? The Skyward Sword main theme? Okay.
I don't remember which song it was, but since you brought it up, you explain.
All right. Well, for the few of you who don't know, by now it's probably majorly fairly well known, especially among Zelda fans. But the main melody of Skyward Sword, the main theme song, is actually Zelda's Lullaby in reverse. So that's pretty cool. You can hop on YouTube and check that out because it's pretty neat. It's very clever. It's a very clever little Easter egg that they
it's not just that you know, they play the song in reverse and hope that it sounds good. They actually, you know, composed it, but it is really neat how they were able to use that song that way.
Yeah, yeah, definitely a really cool nod back to earlier games.
Now, I brought up the Midna and Wolflink amiibo because not only did it come packaged with the HD re-release of the game, but it also will give you a special weapon for Midna if you plug it into perhaps the most fun Zelda game ever, question mark? Hyrule Warriors.
Yes. My favorite Zelda game. I will say that. Sure, it's a side. Sure, it's a side game. It's not really in the main series, but I don't care.
It shows so much love for the franchise overall, and does so much with the cast.
Yeah,
and the story is this fanfic tier thing that you can't help but enjoy. It's like a good fanfic.
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, ah, I see what you're doing there. That's what but this is fun.
That's what the whole game really is. It's just one giant fanfic. It's really, it's chock full of fan service, but it's good fan service.
And at little moments, like, I like the fact that even before Link puts on the tunic, you have Zelda leading armies.
Yeah.
You have Impa doing things. And later on, again, no spoilers because this game's been out for a while. When the vile but inevitable betrayal happens between Ganondorf and Sia, Sia doesn't just roll over and go, oh no, I'm no longer the main antagonist. She goes, no, screw you, my Triforce, and spreads the pieces around.
Yeah.
And remains a player in the story. I just like the fact that everything is used nicely.
Yeah, it's by far, like, gives the game that gives the side characters the most personal agency. Like, Zelda is actually more of a factor than ever before, just in terms of actually, first of all, being able to play as Zelda is one of my favorite things about the game. That's one thing that I've been, you know, wanting and hoping from the main series for probably for forever, just about.
Has there been any other game where she's playable aside from the Wand of whatever it was?
Wand of Gamelon that we won't talk about? Yeah, I don't think so. I do not believe so. The way you've talked about the final fight in Twilight Princess, it seems like she has a little bit more of a hands-on role, at least in the final battle.
She does, but again, you don't play as her directly.
Right.
So.
But I really just appreciate the way that they give more of the side characters more of a chance to shine and that you can play as them. Impa is a badass. I'm just going to say it.
Oh, she's amazing.
She is, yeah. We'll have to censor that, but I don't care because it's the perfect word to describe her. She is awesome.
Everyone is.
Well, yeah, yeah. Even
there's no one you pick up and go, oh, this is kind of lame, except maybe Agatha, because she's the weakest of them. But even so, she's summoning giant laser bugs.
Yeah.
Laser bugs.
Even Fi, if you hated her in Skyward Sword, even in this game, she's, like, pretty freaking cool.
Well, what I love about it is that, you know, not only are the characters there and given agency, but their character types are taken into account. Fi
right.
is all about these dancing and very balletic moves.
Yeah.
She does these kinds of dancey things in Skyward Sword to produce the magic and whatnot that moves the story along. So in Hyrule Warriors, having her twirl and pirouette and dance and skip and hop and it murders hundreds at a time is befitting of the character and very satisfying to play. I don't really have a good handle on it, but that doesn't matter. It looks pretty and it feels good.
Yeah, the animations are astounding. I freaking love that game. Just everyone has a very different feel. Midna's kind of sluggish, so I'm not a huge fan of playing as her normally.
But Midna's kind of odd to play as, I will say, but once you get one or two of her combos down, she can clear a field rather effectively.
Yeah, yeah. I really like how they just made like every character in the game is playable in some way, shape, or form. Every single character, villains, heroes, side characters, it doesn't matter. They're all playable. It's pretty great.
And the amount of content in the game is absolutely staggering. I I've been playing it rather aggressively for a while now, and I still haven't finished the first adventure field map. I'm still missing the final weapons for most of the characters. It's just daunting how much there is, but it doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't really feel too much like a level grind or an item grind, although there is a lot of that. It feels fun to get in there and just tear through mobs, yeah. And when you fail, you're like, I must be stronger. I must play more.
I've heard reports of like 400 hours worth of content. That may be a little exaggerated, but probably not that much.
I would believe it. I would believe it.
Yeah.
And what's even more oppressive is the new 3DS version.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to specify new 3DS because it runs like garbage on any of the older systems.
I can attest to that, yes.
It absolutely does. Hyrule Warrior Legends, which adds more characters, more maps, more stuff.
And more DLC.
Which I'm looking forward to.
Adding more DLC, including going back to... I don't know if they're going back to 2D Zeldas, but they are going to have a whole pack dedicated to Link Between Worlds, at least. So they may not be going back to the earlier games in the series, but they're at least acknowledging the existence of the 2D games, which is one thing that I am kind of disappointed in, is that they don't have, like, they didn't go back to A Link to the Past or even further back.
Well, they're all based off of handheld games.
Which one? Oh, the...
All the DLC is based off handhelds, because this is the handheld version.
That's right, yeah, because they're adding Marin from Link's Awakening. That's right, yep. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense then. Yeah, so, yeah, they're even going back to Link's Awakening. Oh, that's... Okay, that's cool.
There's Link's Awakening, there's somebody from Phantom Hourglass / Spirit Tracks, and from the speculation I've seen, Linebeck seems the most likely, simply because he was a principal supporting character in Phantom Hourglass, which was an okay title.
Mm-hmm.
It frustrated me no end because there was one point in the game where I'm supposed to stamp something. I pressed every button on that stinking handheld. Couldn't figure it out. So I closed the 3DS and going on to GameFAQs, and it says, close your 3DS. It's like, oh yeah, it has two screens. I stamp it by making the top screen touch the bottom screen. Clever. It's never used again. But Linebeck also apparently has some kind of cameo of sorts in Spirit Track, so that seems the most likely.
Yeah.
And then out of A Link Between Worlds, it's pretty much assumed Ravio is going to be playable.
Yeah, probably Ravio and Hilda.
It's either Hilda or... Shoot, what's the villainess's name?
Shoot.
Not Ganon. And I only wonder if it's going to be that one because we already have Hilda skin for Zelda.
Is that Yuga?
Yes, thank you, Yuga.
Okay.
Yuga could be a new playstyle.
Uh-huh.
But maybe they'll go with Hilda because she was the more popular. And it's not like we've had repeating elements before.
Yeah.
I mean, Lana had the Skull Kid outfit. Skull Kid was part of somebody else's summon. So, you know, why not? That's kind of the whole theme of Hyrule Warriors. Why not?
Pretty much. Just what? What is that? What is that random thing? Throw it in. Why not? Just do it.
Do you want to play as Link, which is to say you play as the Great Fairy with Link in a bottle? Why not?
Of course.
Do you want to play as villains from different parts of different series that really make no sense together, even on a visual level? Why not?
Why not? Do you want to play as Toon Link, even though his art style is completely different and makes no sense in whatsoever in this game? Why not?
Do you want to play as Ganon, the Demon King himself,
yes,
and beat up the other bosses from the game? Why not?
Do you want to play as Giant Ganon and just, yeah, pretty much treat all the other bosses as regular mobs. It's pretty glorious.
And then pull a Mega Man and steal their powers. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
If you have not had a chance to play the game, of all the things we've discussed so far in the show, I would highly recommend picking up and playing that one.
We haven't even mentioned the coup de grace yet, though.
By all means, go on.
Linkle? Come on.
Oh, yes. How could I forget? Dear sweet Linkle.
We have to mention Linkle. She's Linkle fantastic. I love Linkle so much.
Well, I love the fact that she really does fall into the realm of why not, because
exactly.
Early concept designs came out showing, well, we thought of maybe doing a girl version of Link. But, you know, we didn't because reasons. And people were like, this is, looks amazing, like every other design for Hyrule Warriors. We want female Link. Come on, it's been 30 years. Why not? Link really wasn't meant to be a singular character. It was the avatar for the player. He kind of became his own entity, sure. But why not? So they added in Linkle. And she shoots lots of crossbows as a nod to the crossbow training tech demo game of all things.
Yeah, yeah. They actually took part of her music theme is the crossbow trainer theme.
That I didn't know.
Yeah.
Again,
pretty great.
Why not?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just a fantastic game.
She just moves around like freaking Gun Fu, Gun Kata, Equilibrium style, double crossbow wielding. Doesn't make any sense, but who cares?
I like the token reload animation, like it makes any sense.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
Yeah. Every time you stop, she like freaking jams her guns down into the holsters to reload them. It's like, well, sure, why not? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't need to be there, but it works. It really works.
It's one of those games where, looking at Legends, it adds a lot of game mechanics and maps and material that really couldn't be patched into Hyrule Warriors. It truly is an expansion beyond just a roster addition.
I would have liked to have seen it added to the main story, though, if or the main game, the console game, if they could have, but I don't know. It would have been nice.
I'm willing to bet rupees against cuckoos that when the NX comes out, we will get a Hyrule Warriors Master Edition with the entirety of Legends included, and knowing these guys, probably even more content.
Yeah.
And I will buy it, even though I haven't even remotely finished the first game. I will buy it again, because gosh darn it, it is fun.
Yeah, I would buy it too. I'm a sucker for this game. It's a great game.
But we've talked enough about Lands Far Away. Let's move on to the Q&A, where you, dear listeners, can ask me and Kyle just about anything. There are three ways that we would like you to pose your questions. Kyle, please tell the people what the best way to get in contact with us is.
You can send your questions via Twitter using the hashtag BumbleCast. Just ask your question on Twitter and add in the hashtag anywhere in your tweet. Or you can send us an email to bumblecast@yahoo.com.
First up, we're going to go to the priority Q&A for those who pay to have their questions answered through the Patreon. If you want to get to the front of the line, yet again, go to patreon.com/bumblecast. Kyle, who do we have first on our priority Q&A?
First up, we have a question from Connell T. They want to know, what is your favorite and least favorite Sonic comic issue before you came on as head writer? In terms of story, characters, and art?
You know what? I really hate to say this, but I'm going to have to not answer this one right now. I will at least explain why, as much as I can. That, unfortunately, and as of this recording, is a very loaded question.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And certain individuals, if they were name-dropped or if they were not, could construe my answers as meaning the company policy of Archie, which I do not represent. I am not an employee of them. I'm just a freelancer who's enjoyed a great deal of work from them. And I hate that, because it should be a simple question. You know, I should be able to, because I grew up reading the book.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I can answer that question without any bias and be able to give you, you know, what I really enjoyed, what I didn't, and give a real critique without looking through the lenses of someone who has worked on the book for 10 years. Unfortunately, there are other people who would not take me at my word for that, and other people who would blow it out of proportion and cause a lot of brouhaha that just shouldn't be. So I am really sorry, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to decline that one.
And as a co-host, and representing Bumble King while I'm on the show, I'll go ahead and decline as well. Just to be sure. Because, I mean, if I say something, I'm less likely to get in trouble for it, but it may cause problems down the road. I want to prefer to avoid that. So I won't chime in on this question either.
See, normally, my knee-jerk reaction is, no, Kyle, you're being ridiculous. Answer the question. But stuff that I have seen and heard makes me kind of hesitate and go, no, you know what? That might be the safest course of action. And it's so disappointing.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to talk to Connell directly here because I know you're listening, dear Connell. Because I had to dance around your question this time around, we'll give you a free Q&A, priority Q&A next episode. Because I feel bad, you know, you paid to get the head of the line, and I said, no.
Yeah. Let us know your question, like, as soon as you hear this, and any other questions you have, we'll prioritize them.
Yeah, if you maybe you get double billing next episode.
We'll throw some stuff in there for you. All right. Well, let's move on to the next question, which I hope we can answer. From the Shadow Imperator, our good buddy. Since Sonic Chronicles and Sonic the Hedgehog 4 never had their stories fully resolved, do you think you would be able to? You think you would be allowed to do so in the comic someday, if you're given the go-ahead to use their characters and plot lines? Argus and Little Planet's fate are two big lingering mysteries, and I wondered if those could ever be addressed in the comic, or if they'll remain locked away forever.
Sonic 4 Episode 3, maybe. I am privy to some super minor information on what might have been in planning stages. No, I'm not ever going to talk about it in depth. Don't even try to go there. But I would be able to use that as a foundation for a finale. Whether or not Sega would want me to acknowledge that or go there, I don't know. As a Sonic fan and as someone who's written Sonic a lot... Yeah, just a smidge. You might know that. You might not. Just
a tiny bit.
I would love to go there, but it's not high on my priority right now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it kills me because Eggman builds the Death Egg 2 around Little Planet. That's amazing. That's freaking sweet. I would love to see that resolved. But because Sonic 4 nebulously falls on the timeline possibly before the adventure line, maybe, it's already happened in terms of the continuity, you know? And there's already tons of story that I want to go back to and cover. So, maybe one day.
Yeah, you'd be kind of be going backwards at that point.
Right. Now, Sonic Chronicles is mired in technicalities and stuff that kind of harkens back to Connell T's question.
Yeah, I was going to say, very similar... issues, yeah, very similar issues for both of these.
Right now, it's not even on the table to consider. I'm not going to say never, because things could change. They would have to radically change in very specific ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not even going to speculate at that point, because why bother? It's so far out of my control, it's not really worth wasting a worry over it, as my mother might say. So... maybe Sonic 4 Episode 3, probably not Sonic Chronicles anytime in the immediate future, or long-term future, but you never know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And our last priority Q&A question comes from Daniel L. He wants to know, what movie are you looking forward to this year, and why?
Oh, that's got to be Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still worried, I'm anxious. And we've covered this before, but, I mean, it's got so many characters in it, and it's not really Captain America anymore, but you could also argue that because the Marvel Cinematic Universe has expanded and become so interconnected, it would be kind of hard not to address it. Like, in Thor 2, when everything's getting blown up, the first reaction was, where's S.H.I.E.L.D.? Where are the rest of the Avengers? Come on, don't they have each other's phone numbers? So... never mind the story of Civil War, but with Captain America, you would imagine, where is everybody else? So, there's that. I'm greatly encouraged that a lot of the preview scenes that they're showing shows the debate between Steve and Tony, and that it sounds like an intelligent debate. It isn't just, we need to register. No, we should not. You are bad. No, you are bad. They, and, you know, fall to the levels that the comic did.
Yeah.
It actually feels like a mature clashing of ideals between people who have been to hell and back in multiple ways from multiple directions. It's a growth of the characters and how their ideals would clash. Now, granted, it's the plot line that is forcing them into that situation, but it feels organic from what little we've seen so far. So it feels like they're going to do it right. The early reviews are glowing, so fingers crossed. I really hope it rocks, because Winter Soldier was probably the best superhero movie ever, and I want it to be at least in the ballpark of that.
Yeah.
What about you, Kyle? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to several movies this year. It's actually a pretty decent year for movies, all things considered. Looking over the list, I'm usually like, there's not much coming out this year that I really care for, but... Civil War, I'm definitely looking forward to. I'm happy that early reviews are positive, so I'm definitely, that makes me feel a lot better. X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Days of Future Past was really good, even though it has, like, nearly nothing to do with the original comic whatsoever. That's okay. I'm sure Apocalypse won't either, but I really enjoy the X-Men movie series, X-Men 3 notwithstanding.
It's had more hits than misses.
It's true, it has. And so I'm definitely looking forward to that one. What else is coming
out? One caveat I have with X-Men Apocalypse, I'm going to butt in here. I don't mind the costume redesign, and I don't think we've seen enough of the actor to really get a feel for how he's going to do Apocalypse.
Ah, yeah.
The only thing that I'm snagged on is the voice. Because I'm so used to the 90s cartoon Apocalypse with that deep, resonating, godlike voice. And then this guy sounds like a guy. So just add a little bit of reverb. You don't have to go full Bane, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that kind of goofy, you only accepted the psychic powers. I was born into them. none of that. But we'll see how it goes.
I'm pretty much used to everything from the 90s cartoon, so if it were just like the live action 90s cartoon, I'd be good with that, but it's still fun. Let's see, Independence Day Resurgence. That's just like pure, I'm just curious how they even bring that back.
I didn't realize it was coming out this year.
Yeah, it's not even coming out in July, which is really stupid. let's see. The new Ghostbusters movie? I am actually looking forward to that.
And are they both coming out this year, or is it just the one?
Just one.
Okay.
It's just the female-led Ghostbusters movie coming out this year. I'm actually looking forward to that, and I realize that a lot of people are probably going to be like, probably not going to agree with me.
That's okay. There's a lot of needless brouhaha.
Yeah, that's okay.
Point is, you're looking forward to it.
I am. You know... Modern comedy actually doesn't do a lot for me, but, you know, that one doesn't look too bad. So I'm interested. Suicide Squad comes out this year, so I would like to see that just based on the previews that were attached to Batman v Superman. And I think that's... Oh, wait, Rogue One at the end of the year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Rogue One.
Yeah. Rogue One looks really good.
Does Doctor Strange come out this year?
Doctor Strange comes out this year in November too.
That looks neat, but yeah, Rogue One. Ooh.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything of Doctor Strange, to be honest.
The trailer looks interesting.
I didn't even know there was a trailer.
It just dropped.
Okay. But, I'll have to check it out.
Never mind that Rogue One. Yes. That at the end of the trailer when it's got the two themes kind of interwoven, is like, ooh, that got chills.
Yeah. If it really does end up, like, if it does end up being the story of Kyle Katarn, I'm cool with that.
Wait, what?
If we bring Kyle Katarn in there.
I did not realize this was a rumor. Kyle Katarn? Really?
It's possible. I mean, there's a guy who looks vaguely like Kyle Katarn in there.
Oh, Disney, would you do that to me? Would you bring back my boy?
He could be an XB of Kyle Katarn. It may not actually be him. But then there's also the rumor that Jin Ursi, or I think that's how it's pronounced, is an XP of Jan Ors, maybe.
Oh, interesting.
So.
We'll just have to see.
Yeah. I'm just like, finally a Star Wars prequel that might actually be really good. And that's it for me for this year.
And that's it for our priority Q&A. Let's move on to the regular Q&A.
Line by Line has a question for you, Ian. What video game series would be the most challenging and or least attractive to try to adapt as a monthly comic?
Ooh, that is an interesting question. And it would probably tick off a lot of people depending on how I answer.
I got one.
Shoot.
I don't even write comics, but I already have one. Bayonetta.
Really?
The story is really convoluted. like really convoluted. I suppose you could do it. I mean, a lot of comics are convoluted. But it would be tough, I think, to really pull it off.
I don't know. I think the biggest challenge with doing a Bayonetta comic would be so much of Bayonetta's appeal stems from the soundtrack and the visuals, just the over-the-top action sequences that you are involved in, that just reading that action straight could not even remotely compare.
Right.
You would really need the right artist
and the right
team to stage it to even come close to capturing that feel.
You would need a really strong artist for a Bayonetta comic.
And, I don't know, considering how, I don't want to say stagnant, but stationary some of their cutscenes are, since they're more of a tableau and not so much a cutscene in the conventional sense, It almost lends itself to comic book style storytelling. So, I don't know, that might be possible. I guess that's true.
The anime movie didn't really do that, though. But the games do, so I could kind of see it working for that.
I know that out of all the Nintendo properties that I've been asked about, the one I grapple with the most is Mario, simply because it doesn't have an overarching storyline.
Mm-hmm.
There are, very basic storylines per game. The RPGs definitely have, their individual stories fixing into a larger arcing storyline. But in terms of what Mario's limitations are story-wise, there aren't a whole lot, because anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
One day everything's gold. Why? Because, here's all the Koopalings under Bowser and they run rampant. That's the story for multiple games. What is the geographical location of all of these kingdoms and worlds to each other? What defines a world, that seems to vary between games? What is the hierarchy? What's the social structure? Because you have all these kings and princesses all over the place. And it's not that it's poorly constructed, it's Mario is so much looser and more fanciful than a lot of other stories out there that anything is possible. You hop in a warp pipe, you're fighting a crazy alien who's kidnapping the flower princess, and you hop in another warp pipe and you're in a world where everything is 2D paper. It's just anything goes with Mario. And since there's so many possibilities, it's a lot harder to pin it down, and tell a specific story. It definitely would not be how I've approached Sonic or Mega Man. It would have to be a completely different approach.
I think Mario would have to be kind of maybe focus on like a certain era or certain sub-series, like a Super Mario Galaxy comic.
Right, and even then...
even then it's still wide open to interpretation.
I think it would have to be more kind of episodic adventures and then maybe build to something bigger.
Yeah.
Kirby almost falls into the same trap, but Kirby has these very distinct, memorable final bosses that you can build towards. And my dream is to one day be able to go in and just tell the Dark Matter trilogy straight up, because, that's fun.
Nice. That would be awesome.
Metroid would be very difficult in that you would need the right artist on the team to properly capture the scope and the sense of loneliness that surrounds Samus. I would love to get into Samus's character because she's not human. She looks like a blonde bombshell, but she's not human. She was raised by the Chozo And by the end of Fusion, she's part Metroid herself. She's been fully corrupted by Phazon. She's not really human at all when you get down to it. She wasn't raised human for the most part. She barely interacts with humans. She's all alone. And she's this force of nature with the power suit. She doesn't fit in anywhere, you know, you would think of. Now, how does that work within the rest of the galaxy? Are there other individuals who are... Whoops. Let the mic selling for a second.
No problem.
You know, how is that compared to the rest of the galaxy? Are there other individuals who are just as detached as she is? Is she truly unique in that universe? And if so, how does she interact with them? Because, you know, being initially human and being brought up by the Chozo, she has an idea of what social interaction is. Taking other M into account to a small degree, she was with the Galactic Federation for a time, so she knows what it's like to have interpersonal relations, but I can't imagine that it comes easily to her.
Mm-hmm.
But at a glance, she looks human. So how do other people interact with her? How do they change how they interact with her when they find out she's Samus Aran? And how does she see regular humanity? You know, people who are so frail and small compared to her. People who, you know, have not been to an alien world where everything spits acid and wants to eat your face, so you blow up that world. Where does she even begin to find common ground with these people? And I think there is an absolutely fascinating character study and story to be had. And you really would need the right artist to get that, because if she goes on one of these solo missions into one of these alien worlds that's devoid of human or even intelligent life, space pirates besides, because there's always space pirates.
Of course.
You need to convey that sense of exploration and dread and loneliness without it being a boring series of, you know, just artsy panels. It really would be a tricky balancing act, but I think if done right, it would just be a gorgeous sci-fi adventure horror series.
I think Metroid Prime might be one of the sources you could look at more for like the interactions between Samus and other people.
Right. There's little bits there, but I'd love to explore it even more. Because all you see of Samus is her on the mission, really. You don't really get to see a lot of her in her downtime.
Right. Of the series you've mentioned, I would say Metroid would be the one I'd most like to see, and probably the one with the most potential. Just kind of exploring Samus' character, hopefully without falling down the trap of what happened with her character in Other M, would be definitely an interesting balancing act, but it would be a good story.
This is going to sound totally pretentious, and I realize that, but I would love a chance to fix Other M.
Mm-hmm.
Take the story that's there, tweak it where it needs to be to make it a more appropriate Samus story.
I think you can do that, because the story, the actual basic story of Other M is usable. It was just the way they characterized her, I think, is where a lot of people were turned off. So, and I actually really like the gameplay and the look and the feel of Other M outside of the main plot, I suppose, the main story. But, just the characterization was definitely turned off a lot of people. All right, from Jazzy Man. In Worlds Unite, when Sonic got roboticized, he was able to move faster than time itself while fighting Time Man. Was this speed gained through the robotization? Or can he do this as normal Sonic?
It was definitely a perk of being a roboticized master.
Awesome. I want that power. Can I get roboticized?
You kind of lose your free will, Kyle.
Can I get roboticized? Next question from Scourge. Yeah. I don't know if you can answer this, but what would the names be of the Ordorix? I read about it in the Complete Sonic Comic Encyclopedia, and it made me curious.
I will be covering that when I finally get to it in Lost Hedgehog Tales.
Well, there we go.
It is coming. I promise it's just a lot of other things need to come first.
Is it Orderix? Is that the correct pronunciation? Yes. Okay. It's not Orderix or
well, no, because Chaotix comes from chaos, so Orderix comes from order.
Clever. We're so clever.
Yeah, get by.
That's smart. That's smart. And that's it for Q&A this episode.
We also have a patron-sponsored ad for this show. If you would like your ad featured on the Bumblecast, head on over to patreon.com/bumblecast, and we'll sell just about anything you pay us to sell. But this one comes from Daniel Harris, who likes to remind us that while we all know of this one man's work, you can have him work for you. Daniel has hired this immensely talented man twice, and the results are worth every penny. Visit herms85.deviantart.com and check out his availability. He is, of course, referring to Matt Herms, the coloring genius from Sonic the Hedgehog, Mega Man, and the absolutely amazing Power Rangers comic book.
Nice.
And before we wrap up the show, we're going to send a shout out to everyone who supported us on Patreon and made this episode possible. Thank you all, guys and gals. You are amazing and generous people. I'd like to thank Daniel H., Samuel P., Justin G., the Shadow Imperator, James K., Patty M., Alex P., Daniel L., and Connell T. Thank you again from the bottom of our hearts.
You are the best.
And if you would like to join this slowly growing list of prestigious and generous and handsome people, head over to patreon.com/bumblecast and toss a dollar our way.
Do that.
If you want to find out more about me, my work, and what I've got going on, head over to bumbleking.com for all the latest goings-on, or head over to Twitter with Ian Flynn, BKC. You'll find everything that I'm talking about.
And you can look up what I'm doing over at kngi.org, where you can also find this podcast, archives of this podcast, and my other shows as well, as plenty of other listening goodness. And you can also follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB.
And one last shout out to the amazing composer of this episode's version of the title theme,
Coda, an all-around awesome dude. Be sure to check out Coda's work at bc.s3m.us.
And that's going to wrap us up for the Bumblecast episode 15. Eighth episode of season 2. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks, folks.
Bye. See you later. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.